CliffCentral.com.
We got Dr. John DeMartini in here. It's always good to see him. And he looks as fresh as he did the last time he was in here. You don't age at all. You're exactly the opposite of Nancy Reagan. Shame.
Yes.
Isn't that horrible? Poor old Nancy.
Yes, I've met her. I've talked to her. So she's an amazing lady.
She was, huh?
Yep.
She was quite something.
Very elegant lady.
Very dignified.
Very dignified, truly.
Yeah. Of course, she was the first lady during a very interesting time in American history, a time where, I suppose, capitalism was at its best in some ways and at its worst in others. But she looked after Ronnie, especially after his presidency. She was kind of there for him every step of the way. And even while he was president, she was such a supporter.
Yes, I would say that she was a role model for a lot of people.
I think so.
Yeah.
But definitely. How are you? You're a role model for a lot of people, Dr. John DeMartini.
Well, I try my best.
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
Good seeing you.
So look, what have you been up to since the last time we spoke about this life on ships, these books that you've written, all these bestsellers? We talked about your whole life. I remember you telling me the story of where you come from and these humble origins and how you had no money at all and you decided to start doing things differently. And I mean, you've inspired a lot of people. That's why I say you're a role model.
Well, I just do what I love doing, which is try to learn as much as I can and try to share as much as I can and travel as much as I can.
And in the last couple of months, what have you been up to? Where have you been?
Oh, gosh. Before here, it was London. Before that was Singapore. Before that was Sydney. Then San Francisco. Then Denver. Then Houston. Then Las Vegas. Los Angeles. And Antarctica before that.
Antarctica. You must have drawn huge crowds of penguins in Antarctica. There's no humans there, right?
A black tie affair there with the penguins.
Very good. Now, listen, you might have been, I don't know if you're up to date with what's been going on in this country, but we've, ever since the president decided to fire our finance minister in December, the economy has gone for a ball of shit, and that means that people inevitably start getting nervous. They turn on each other. You know how humans are. When we feel threatened in any way, or when we feel like our future is in some kind of jeopardy, we tend to get a little nervous, right? And then we find reasons to fight with each other.
Whenever we get superiorly challenged and really feel threatened, we go into a more primitive part of the brain. And as we do, this area called the amygdala comes online. And it's
this
about
is your fight or flight stuff.
Fight or flight. And in some cases, freeze response. And so what happens is we go into this subjectively biased, extreme viewpoint. We have what these confirmation biases and disconfirmation biases. We start to distort what's going on to further extremes. And we become, in a sense, ungoverned, uncontrolled in our behavior and vulnerable to reactions instead of wise actions. So we're more vulnerable when we're under a perception of threat. And this is, I think, adds to the chaos and makes the volatilities of economics and the volatilities of human behavior and prejudice increases. Because we're not able to function from our forebrain. We're in our hindbrain. And our forebrain is more rational, more reasonable, and more objective. The other one is more subjectively biased and emotional. And we end up doing foolish things that we eventually look back at and realize that we reacted without thinking.
And that's when people end up fighting, even in relationships and things, when you feel under those threats and that amygdala part of your brain starts to make the decisions for you, that reptilian primitive brain.
Exactly.
You tend to do very hurtful, say very hurtful, enact very hurtful things.
Well, the ones that we have the closest, most intimate relationship, we feel less vulnerable and we're able to be ourselves. So we allow out our repressions easier and we take it out on the people that we care about. And because we don't feel like we're accustomed there. We don't know what people outside us are going to do, but we know what they're going to do and we can handle that. So we tend to outlash, you might say, on the people that we care about.
Well, here's what happens. In South Africa over the last couple of months, there's been a huge amount of anger and racial tension on social media. It's driven a lot of people to either being completely removed from the situation where they take themselves away and they don't get involved. Or they've got in and they've been bruised on all sides of the argument. I don't think it's been a very positive couple of months for people.
Well, what it will do is catalyze somebody to step up and make some difference. I mean, with the ratings, the Moody ratings and things of this nature, people realize that they're vulnerable if they don't get their head together. So, yes, but when they're in a fight or flight mechanism, either people will want to escape and not deal with it, or they're going to want to go in there and get their two bits into it and cause further reaction. Either way, repression and expression are the two polarities that emerge inside society. And wisdom is transcending that and objectively looking at it and seeing both sides of it and not reacting and making wise decisions. But we don't always do that. And our wisdom sometimes does not prevail.
And as you were saying, because of this part of the brain that it activates, we tend to jump to extremes, and we use extremes to, even if they're incorrect, we use these extremes to inform our next decision.
Well, we end up, it's a chain reaction. It's like a nuclear reaction, a chain reaction that we create something, and then we have to deal with that, and then we have to deal with that, and it just goes on. And then we look back, and eventually we accumulate enough frustrations and pains from our own reactions that we, through some form of a hedonic kind of response, we end up finally saying, okay, I think it's time for us to wake up and look, and we need help sometimes.
And is that the first step to sorting this out? Because if you were our president right now, just the office, let's say, you're in office now, you're the president, you have to take some kind of stand, help South Africans figure out that things are not as bad as they think they are, because, again, we're jumping to extremes. What would you say?
Well, I tell people that if you don't fill your day with high priority actions that truly inspire you, that are meaningful, that are productive, that are poised, your day will fill up with low priority distractions or volatilities and emotional reactions. One builds your self-worth and builds the country and allows people to realize and honor their magnificence and what's possible. And the others basically causes them to play in the animal behavior. And they end up going around in reverberating circuits, seldom learning their lessons. So it's wise to fill your day and fill, in the government, it's wise to educate the people, because educated people are going to be more objective. And it's wise to prioritize what you're doing so you're not doing lower priority things all the time. And reacting and running around in circles with emotional behaviors is not really the ultimate answer. And so prioritizing your actions, that makes a difference. Anytime you're doing something that's prioritized, you're activating the forebrain. And the executive center comes online, and it's involved in inspired vision, which helps countries.
Right.
Strategic planning, which makes you think foresight, not just immediate gratification, which many countries do when they pay the price for immediate gratification instead of thinking long term. What is really the greatest for the country? Execution of that. So you have now somebody that actually lives and walks their talk. And then self-governance, which is the realization that if you're demonstrating it, as Einstein said, teaching, the greatest teacher is exemplification. We exemplify self-governance. It filters down through the ranks and it comes down into the people. So if we are emotion reaction at the highest levels, we're perpetuating people that are even more subjective into more extremes.
And you can see it happen now better than ever, because we've got all this interaction at our fingertips, right? And before, you'd need to research these things. You'd need to have had a doctorate in sociology, and now we can all witness this happening in front of our very eyes.
Well, we have access to information, too. And this is my own personal thinking, but I really believe that a wise leader will get in touch with the people and communicate wise behavior. You know, when we had the economic crazies back in the 2008, 2009 in the States,
yeah,
I thought it was wise to get someone like a Warren Buffett and maybe some leaders up on a stage in a panel and say, this is the way our country is wise to handle this. But no, we reacted and we've put it further into extremes. Without a governor inside the brain, we act like an animal. Inside a society, if you don't have governance, people go into these extremes. And then they pay the price and they have to go to high polarities. And the greater the polarity, the less people have confidence in the world around us. So from the economic perspective, it undermines people's confidence in investing in the country.
Right.
In our own country, South Africa, because I feel like I'm here. I've been here 12 years. I really believe that there's tremendous, massive amount of resource here and a lot of entrepreneurial spirit. And if we focus on solutions more so than dwelling on the problems, we get way farther results.
What is the most regularly asked question when you come here to South Africa by South Africans of you?
I think I mean, 12 years ago, I heard a lot about the racial things. Mm. For many years, I didn't hear as much of that. Recently, I've seen a little bit more of that.
Yeah.
But people want to be able to go and do what they really want to do. They want the freedom to have the lifestyle that they want. They want to go and have the family that they want. I mean, there's things that are common to all cultures. But people want to be able to do something that's meaningful. They want to make a difference. They want to feel like they're serving people and being rewarded for it. And they want a fair exchange.
Like they matter.
They matter, and that they want a fair exchange. And frankly, we deserve that. I tell people in my programs, you want to do as much altruistic service as you possibly can and serve as many people as you can, and you want to do as much narcissistic rewards as you can and take both of them to the extremes and go to live the most amazing life. You got to give yourself permission to do a most amazing life.
And sometimes when you're doing really good things, people are rewarding you because they think you deserve that.
Well, I was asked the other day about jobs, and I said, you know, I was, I think I mentioned it maybe in the last time, that when I was nine, I went to my dad and I asked him if I could earn some money.
He told you to hit the road.
Well, he told me, he said, did you mow the yard?
Yeah.
Did you edge and all that? And I said,
free money? Are you mad?
Yeah, he wanted me to work. So I had to go to the neighbors to get money. And I'm very grateful that he pushed me to understand that if I want something, I have to earn it and work for it. Entitlement doesn't build societies. Empowerment does. And in any area of our life we don't empower, people are going to overpower. So we have to empower our life.
Okay. So the most of the questions would be somewhere around there then.
Yeah. How do I live the life that I would really want to live? And what are the highest priority things I can do to get there? And how do I make the difference that I want to do? And how do I get rewarded financially? People want to be rewarded. Finance is a universal value that people want. And there are scientific behaviors that allow a person to increase the probability of having that lifestyle.
Now, let's talk about your own, the country of your birth, America at the moment. I mean, politically, that's a very interesting place right now. A part of me really wants Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump to go head to head just because they're two of the wackiest candidates we've ever seen. For various reasons, good and bad on both sides. I mean, Bernie Sanders, the first proper socialist with a chance. And he could have some very interesting policies up his sleeve for America. He's also been in government for a long time. Then there's Donald Trump. I mean, what can't we say about this guy? He's like 100% ego up on that stage, right?
Yeah, I've actually had the opportunity. I lived in Trump Tower, so I've got to interact with the Donald.
So you know him.
I know him. My wife used to hang out with his wife.
Hello, John. Are you paying for that apartment in cash?
He is definitely a character, but he has another side. Yeah. He has the side for the media, but he also has a very, you know, grounded side at times. But I didn't think he was going to get as far originally.
Nobody did.
I didn't think he was going to get this far. I thought for sure that he was going to be too bold and outrageously outspoken to do things. But he's pulled it off. He's saying some things that people want to hear. But the question is when you get actually in the office, it's a different story. You got work to do.
Do you think this could be the biggest marketing campaign of all time?
Well, I, from the data I've seen, I think he spent $27 million out of his own pocket, and that's it. Most of these people are paying $150 million. He is leveraging the media with his sensationalism. He's leveraging it.
It's incredible. He's getting way more attention than a lot of candidates and everything else.
And he'll speak right over people and just take command of his speech, which is bold. And I think that part of it is intriguing.
It's kind of an interesting psychological experiment to be watching, too.
It is. And I was in Tehran, speaking in Tehran this year. I was just trying to picture, because I spoke to 200 government officials and 400 corporate leaders, and I imagined Donald there and just wondering how that would go over.
I wonder.
I was thinking, diplomatically, this will be an interesting adventure to see.
Well, what do you think is going to happen there with the U.S. presidents?
Well, the thing is, the history, looking at the oscillation between the Republican and Democratic parties through time, the Democratic may have 8 years, but I've never seen anything more than 8 years. And the Republican, 8 years, nothing more. They'll have two terms at the max, and then it flops. So with that in said, then it's obviously going towards Republican because we've had a lot of socialistic things from Obama. So it's very probable to go to Republic, which means that Donald has a possibility here. And that'll be an interesting dynamic if he comes into operation.
Then the building you live in will be owned by the President of the United States.
Well, he's
paying directly.
He's a character.
That.
But, you know, I've actually had the opportunity to chat with him, not only in the elevator a few times, but outside and at a couple functions. When you get him one-on-one and he's not got his showmanship, he's really very intelligent guy. He does a lot of research. So he gives, there's two sides to him. I've seen him where he's really grounded and having an incredible conversation. I've also seen him having his fun up there in his Atlantics. So I don't know what he's going to do actually in office.
Avishkar says that Trump and Bernie are the only two candidates speaking up against the establishment and corruption. Dib, are people all over the world just tired of governments hoodwinking us?
I always say that if we are not empowered as people, the people that run the government will overpower, and they will take advantage of that. So you have to keep them in check. You have to have transparencies and keep them in check. And I don't think that some of them even go in with that intention. I think that's what emerges. So I think that, I think that we as a nation, as people, we have to become empowered in our own lives so we have the ability to keep in check in the government. I think that has to go both ways.
When you sit down and you plan what you're going to talk to people about, how do you come up with your ideas? How do you decide what's important and what isn't? How do you prioritize? You spoke about priorities earlier. How do you prioritize what people need to hear, what they want to hear, what kind of stuff they might be most interested in?
Well, I'm a constant avid reader. I read every day, and I learn as much as I can. And so as a result of that, I come across things that I suspect are going to be inspiring and meaningful, and I'll play those. And sometimes I'll get an audience that I'm not matching, and so I have to adapt and try to find something that's meaningful to them. I have to go in and ask questions sometimes to get information from them or what their needs are. It's a blend of what inspires me that I think will be meaningful and a blend of what I think that they're wanting. And sometimes I match it well and sometimes I don't. It's a feedback and a learning process for me.
Now, you also mentioned empowerment, and it kind of ties in with your talks as well. How does that actually work? How do you empower people? I mean, I've always thought that it's difficult to do that if they aren't going to empower themselves.
Well, I'm not empowering anybody.
No, but how do you get people to start empowering themselves?
Yeah, what I can do is I can give them tools and methods and ideas that can assist and principles that can help them do it. When it comes to learning, for instance, whatever is really, really, truly inspiring, meaningful, and priority to us, we tend to excel in our learning process. So one question that's wise to ask is, whatever I'm going to learn at my work or at my school or whatever form, how specifically is it going to help me meet and fulfill what's most meaningful to me? If I can't see how it's going to help me fulfill what's meaningful to me, I'm going to shut it out and I'm going to have attention deficit instead of attention surplus. I won't retain the information. I won't apply the information. The same thing in work. People don't go to work for the sake of a business. They go to work to fulfill what's meaningful to them. So they can see how their job duties are helping them do and fulfill what's meaningful to them. They're engaged. The same thing in economics. If you really, truly a value wealth building, you won't be consuming depreciables and living off other people's brands to try to feel good about yourself. You'll actually build a brand around yourself and make sure you're serving people to have people look to you and pay you. And relationships.
That's a big deal, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because many people live in a fantasy. I want to be financially independent. But really what they have in their mind is that lifestyles of the rich and famous that they can't afford, and they don't even have the values to lead themselves towards long term. And then in relationships, the way you empower those is to realize that a human being is not committed to you. They're committed to fulfilling what's most important to them. And so if you can't help them fulfill what's important to them and help them get what they want, they're not likely to be interested in you. So you have to ask, how specifically is what they're dedicated to helping you fulfill what's important to you, and vice versa, to be able to have a dialogue instead of an alternating monologue. And in social leadership, I really believe that people, when they're living congruently, they spontaneously emerge as a leader. So if they're not living really authentically, eventually that shows up, and that filters down in society because they're not living and exemplifying. So by prioritizing your life and delegating lower priority things and getting on with what's most meaningful to you and giving yourself permission to be inspired by something, I mean, a leader has to be inspired by some calling or cause. Otherwise, they're not really a leader. They're just following other people. And in health and physiology, when we're doing something that's meaningful and inspiring, we are more likely to eat to live, not live to eat. We're more likely to be governed in our behavior, in our physiology, neurologically. And so we end up getting the most wellness and use stress instead of distress. In our spiritual life, I think that people, when they're inspired by what they do and they can't wait to get up in the morning, there's more opportunities to do what they do and more opportunities in their life. So living by priority is very significant, and it helps you empower all areas. And people have the capacity to do that. It really doesn't matter what you've been through, or what you're going through, what you've experienced. What matters is how you perceive it, what you decide to do with it, and what you act on. And if you prioritize your life every day and you're grateful for the things that happen, you get more to be grateful for and you get more empowered. So that's something that society, I think, deserves to do.
It's like a virtuous cycle, right?
It's a virtuous cycle instead of a vicious cycle. Yeah. And that is something that you can hear, but once you develop the habit of it, it starts taking root, and it does make a difference. And the more powered people there are, the less likely they're vulnerable to subjective biases because they become educated.
Yeah, your brain starts using its full capacity instead of just firing on one cylinder. Now, what inspires you? I mean, what gets you going every day? Even at a young age, you decided you didn't want to just hang around and do the least possible work available. Well, you know, what got you going?
I told you before, I think that I nearly died when I was 17.
Yeah.
And that day I was laying face down in a tent and almost died. I said to myself, if I make it through this ordeal, I want to do something meaningful in my life. I didn't think I'd ever be intelligent. I didn't think I would amount to much. But I really wanted to do something, and that was the catalyst. That was the beginning.
So you had to be as low as that in order to realize. In my case,
that's what happened. But
right.
But now, I like to think of the universe as like this giant puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of there's millions of pieces in it. And every time I can discover another piece and put it in, you know, the fulfillment of actually putting and seeing the puzzle glazed over nicely. Every time I get to find another piece of how to maximize human behavior in society, I get inspired and I want to share that with people. And so I love doing that. I'm just as inspired to do that today as I was when I was 17 years old, 18 years old. I can't wait to get up in the morning and do that. Because I've watched it, and I've seen what happens in people's lives when they do get the ahas, they get the gamma burst in the brain, and they see a solution to a problem. I think that when we solve a mystery, solve a problem, answer a question, fill a need, fulfill or bring order to their chaos, or help them get an opportunity out of a challenge, I think that brings meaning to people's lives, and I love doing that.
Yeah, that's a pretty special thing, and it's something anybody could do. It really, you don't need to be fantastically wealthy. You don't need to have the biggest network of people in business or friendships or anything else. You just have to make the decision, right?
Well, I got to share this story. I was in London just about a week ago, and a young gentleman, 22 years old, flew from Delhi, India, to have a consult with me. And I didn't know who this person was. Never met him. Came in from India. We had a 3-hour consult in the evening. Inspired young man.
Yeah.
He had learning problems. The reason why he wanted to fly with me is because about when he was 16, he got a hold of some of my materials and stuff, and he got inspired by some of it. He said he wanted to meet me because he had a similar thing. He had learning problems. He was kicked out of school, 5 schools actually. Parents used to beat him because he wouldn't do well in school. All he wanted to do is cars. He just wanted to look at cars, study cars, focus on cars, drive cars. Everything. His whole life was about cars. He had a very concentrated focus. Well, he created a blog, Automotive India,
yeah,
and it went berserk. And Hyundai, the president of Hyundai, CEO of Hyundai, contacted him, flew him first class to Korea to actually discuss with him his ideas on cars and the feedback he's getting from people on his blogs. 13 producers of cars around the world all asked him for his advice. He's 22 years old. He's a multimillionaire today. And he flew in just to say thank you, basically, and to tell me it. And he showed me an 1,800-page master plan of what he wanted to do for cars of the future. And he designed a car that would leave the Earth and go into space. I get that.
Wow. He's 20, I gotta meet this guy.
He's 22 years old, and I was just blown away by his thing. And he says, I can't wait to get up in the morning and design the car of the future. That's all he wants to do. He says, I'm here for cars. I'm here to do that. He found his niche and his mission when he was about 16 years old. And they laughed at him, and they ridiculed him, and they do the typical things that people are when they're standing out and transcending the average. Most people sit and subordinate to their mothers, their fathers, their preachers, their teachers, or their community, or their city, or their state, or their nation,
yeah,
and they're part of the herd instinct. Very few people give themselves permission to go and be transcendent to that and be the real leader, the authentic person that creates an original idea that serves humanity. Very few people are willing to do that. He was one of those people.
Why are so few people willing to step out of their comfort zone and do that?
Well, I think there's a natural, probably going back anthropologically thousands of years, we didn't survive well on our own. We had to depend on other people to survive, so we clustered together. When we're threatened, we go and cluster together to protect us. And so anytime we're in a phobia, And the most common phobias I found are when people subordinate to people and try to be somebody else. They compare themselves to others. They try to live envying and imitating other people and going against their own natural value system. And then they beat themselves up when they can't get what they want because they're striving to be somebody they're not. And then they feel insecure and they live in the fear, and then they fear of rejection, and it gets to be a vicious cycle. So very few people break out of that fear of, you know, transcending the superego, they might say, the injected values of authorities.
See, that's good stuff to know, right? And by the way, you can call us on 0861-555-189. You can Skype us in Cliff Central, one word. You can also send us a message to screen, and I'll put your questions or your comments to Dr. John DeMartini, who's with us again. I remember you telling that this harrowing story of kind of how you almost died and how you went through these really tough times. But it must be interesting now to be able to reflect back on this life that you've led. And I mean, it's a fascinating life. You get to meet people from all walks of life, all kind of countries, people who have tremendous success and people who are really just starting their success.
Yeah,
is there a common characteristic among all these people who get success?
Yeah, they give themselves permission to go after what's meaningful to them. And sometimes they run into snags and challenges, but I always say that it's the challenges that initiate innovation, creativity, and genius in people. I consulted with a 43-year-old man in London three years ago. He's the son of one of the wealthiest men in London. And he was given $3 billion by his father. And his father said, "Leave me alone, get out of the family, you're useless."
Wow.
And said, "Just take $3 billion.
I would love to have $3 billion just for being useless.
Just get out of the family, leave us alone, don't bother us, you don't exist, here's $3 billion. Because he realized that he over-supported, enabled, disempowered his child by giving him too much. And he realized it was futile. And he came to me and consulted because he was angry because his father didn't give him the entire company and his fortune. I mean, it's ridiculous. He was a child. He was about a 10-year-old child in a 43-year-old body. And he asked me, "What do you think I would be wise to do?" And I said, "The wisest thing you could do is take all your money, give it back to your dad, and go get a job and work your way up and learn how to be a human being that takes on challenges. So you will then earn the right to have that fortune passed on. Because otherwise it's rags to riches to rags repeated."
Yeah.
And so often people don't realize that the very challenges in their life is the gifts that they get. The challenges in my life is what allowed me to do what I'm doing. It's not the support and the easy path. It was the challenges. And so many people, when they're in the amygdala, they want to avoid challenge and seek the easy life. But the easy life attracts challenges you don't want. If you're not filling your day with challenges that inspire you, it's going to fill up with challenges that don't. And if you don't go after doing something that makes a difference in the world, you're not going to have the greatest fulfillment in life. And people think that they want to escape those things, but those are the things that make life powerful and allow you to accomplish something in life. And at the end of your life, you're going to ask, did you do everything you could with everything you were given? And if you can't say thank you for your own life and you feel like you've done something, then it's wise to prioritize your life a little differently.
What about people who, and in South Africa, we have a lot of people who obviously come from, you know, the past of this country is a complicated one. And there are whole swathes of the population who were treated as second-class citizens and who didn't have any kind of advantage, grew up in abject poverty in very, very many cases. I mean, these people have a legitimate excuse to be angry, right?
Well, the thing is that you could say that, but I've never seen blame empower people. I've never seen entitlement empower people. I've seen people go, okay, this is what's happened. Now, how do we use this to our advantage now?
It's right, not you what, don't have a time machine. You can't go
you
back.
Can't, you can't dwell on the past, in my opinion. You're not going to get any. If you hold on to the past, you're going to perpetuate the past. I was in Ireland, and the president and Martin McAleese and Mary McAleese, they were running the show there. So I met with them at their White House greenhouse there. And they were saying that we still have the same conflict that's going on decade after decade after decade because we keep perpetuating the victim mentality. And so I got to go in there and do a pilot study in Northern Ireland there with six people who had killed people and the families that they had killed the families of, and mediate this situation. We actually got them to a point where they transcended that anger, and they were literally in hugs with each other at the end of it, because there's ways, there's the science of how to help people dissolve those wounds. But if you keep perpetuating the wound, you'll recycle the same thing again. So you don't want to deny that those things are occurred. That's the case. But you want to say, now how do we take that and now move forward? And because it's not what happens to you, it's what you decide to do with it. Because I could make a list of all the things that have happened in my life, and I could sit there and dwell on them, and I could use them as my excuses. But the question is what are we going to do with it, and how are we going to do something amazing with this nation? Because if you stop and look at those could be the catalyst.
Absolutely.
They could be a catalyst of doing something amazing with the nation, and I'd rather see that. So I'm going to perpetuate that and teach that and do what I can with that, because I think that dwelling on the past is not... The subconscious mind is filled with wounds, but the superconscious mind is filled with dreams. If you go after and fulfill your dream, you're going to go farther than if you sit there and wallow in your party, in your pat. I always say, you got to, instead of being a victim of your history, let's be a master of our destiny.
Well, that's something you could also do. You don't have to be defined by where you come from.
No.
Right?
I've seen people come from... I saw a young boy who is 14 years old in Khayelitsha that I met in Cape Town, who came to a talk. 800 people were there. He was in the back. He heard me speak about changing your finances and about changing your life. I saw him again in December. That was September he was there. And then December he came back. He'd saved 20% of his money in the 3 months.
Yeah.
He stacked bricks as a career. He made 60 cents a day doing it. He had 9 brothers and sisters. His parents have died of AIDS. He was 14 years old, and he was running the show. He was the parent.
Oh.
And he was able to save 15 cents a day, and he started to manage his money wisely, and he was starting to do it. And he said he has a dream of getting his own house that has a light bulb near water. So it didn't matter what he started with. He started doing the things that changed his life, and he accomplished and achieved that, and he was wanting to inspire other kids in Khayelitsha. So here's a person that's gone through a poverty challenge, family crazies, but he decided to turn it to opportunity because he had the attitude that makes it. And William James said the greatest discovery of our generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes and their perceptions of life. So I'm a firm believer in taking whatever's happened and find out how you can use it to the greatest.
Turn around, make it an advantage. Now, I'm interested, you talk quite a lot in your work about, and I'm talking about these 9 internationally best-selling published titles. 28 different languages?
Yeah, I think 29 languages.
Yeah, amazing. Now, how to make one hell of a profit and still get to heaven? Is this something people are worried about, that in order to be successful financially, you have to be a bad person? Or that if you've made money, you must have done bad things?
That's very commonly believed and infiltrated into the mind from sometimes religious constructs. What my objective was, I was walking down Madison Avenue when that title came to me, getting ready to go to an Italian restaurant in New York. And I thought, so many people feel guilty receiving. It was astonishing. Around the world, I see this. They feel that if they
Explain
get ahead,
this.
Yeah, they feel that they get ahead, that somehow they're not being a good person. And so the whole book, the purpose of the book is to help people realize that you can do something that is inspiring, that makes a contribution, and you can become wealthy in your life. You know, I asked people, how many people have ever used Microsoft Windows? And almost every hand goes up. I said, well, now you know why he's a billionaire. He found something that served people. And if we go out and care enough about humanity to go find something to serve people, there's no reason why we can't be abundantly rewarded. Not because of greed, but because of service. And my dad told me, if I serve people and give them more than what they expect, I will never worry about paying my bills. I will always have enough income. But you have to care about people. There has to be a balance between giving and taking.
Absolutely. And people will then reward you for the care that you give. You have the interest that you have in them and the ability you have to change their lives.
Walt Whitman said that a worthy person can always find a job. If somebody can't find a job, it's because they're not caring enough to walk and find somebody that has a need. And I'm a firm believer that we can find a need. I've been in situations that I've always found some way of filling a need. And caring enough to ask the question, how can I be of service to you, is an amazing thing to make a difference.
So how are we doing in South Africa? You interact with people all the time. Are you optimistic and positive about what's going on here, or do you think that we've got lots to worry about?
Well, just a few weeks ago, I was starting to question some things with what was going on. But right now, I see some signs that there's a movement back, and I think your Rand will stabilize again, and I think that people will realize that it's the story and the I guess you could say the game that's going on in politics is about to come to a new phase. I think that we have to have whoever's running in government. Eventually, if they think they're narcissistically trying to run the show, eventually you get busted, you get caught. So the wisest thing to do is to make sure that you find a balance between the give and the take and the narcissism and altruism. A leader is a true leader when the self equals the other. Those have to be balanced. Uh-huh. It was Schopenhauer says that we become our true self as a leader to the degree that we make everyone else ourself. And when we do that and we care about them, we end up becoming a greater leader. And we end up with more rewards. And that's it's not immediate gratification. It's long-term vision and leaving a legacy that way. That's the difference. And I think that that's going to emerge in your country. I do.
You spend a huge amount of time living out of a suitcase, right?
Yes.
I mean, do you have a home base?
Well, I have. We had 11 homes at one time.
I know. This is why I can't. When you're looking for that purple tie that you're wearing this morning, for example, do you know which house it's in? You don't know.
No, I. People, you know, when my wife was alive, she passed away about 11 and a half years ago. When she was alive, she was the one that wanted all the houses. I'm a nomadic guy.
Yeah, you are. You don't want to settle.
So even though I have those things, I'm really there. They're mainly just rental properties today. I full-time travel and just go city to city, country to country.
Where do you put your stuff?
I have two bags, and mm-hmm. I travel with two bags with about 8 suits, and I go full-time around the world. And I recycle the suits and recycle things, and I live in hotels most of the time.
And you don't have things, little, whether it's sentimental ornaments or whether it's something that you were given as a gift by your mom or something that you don't have stuff like that you need to keep somewhere.
No, because then you just accumulate that and you end up having that run your life. So I get gifts, and some of them are very meaningful. I have, like right now, I've got this gift that was given to me.
Oh, cufflinks.
Cufflinks. It says, love and wisdom.
Love and wisdom on the cufflinks. Yeah, so who gave those to you?
A doctor in New York, actually. I made a difference in his career and things. And he came to me and says, I want to say thank you to you. And he gave it to me at a conference. And those are meaningful to me because I've dedicated my life to the love of wisdom and the wisdom of love. And so those are very meaningful to me. So those travel with me. But a lot of times I get gifts and I'm not even knowing what to do with them. I can't. There's no place to put them.
So you're not into accumulating things. Even though you once had all these properties, you're now... They're just a source of income for you, right?
I'm.
It's interesting.
I love learning and I love teaching.
Most people think that when you have success, you need to show yourself or other people, and you need to accumulate material possessions.
Well,
that's the point of life for some people.
There's nothing wrong with that. I don't have any problem with that. I would rather what. I just got through doing the Breakthrough Experience yesterday. I finished it. My voice is a little hoarse today.
Tell me, what is the Breakthrough?
The Breakthrough Experience is the program I do about 40 times a year. I've done 1,061 programs.
Wow.
I've done it for many years. I love doing that program because it's my attempt to do what Paul Bragg did with me. He helped me shift the trajectory of my life by sharing ideas that could change my life. That is more important to me right there than any of this other stuff. What's important is actually watching a tear in the eye, a light bulb go on, and see somebody see a possibility in their life and go out and do something extraordinary with their life. And then hearing the stories of that, that's more important than any friggin' house or any car and stuff. I mean, I don't even drive. I haven't driven in 25 years. My wife bought a car. She bought a Rolls Royce one time. And I said, well, we don't drive. And she says, I know, but it's got a front, the front of it's got this beautiful little goddess on it.
That was all that she wanted.
She just wanted the goddess. She said she wanted to buy that, you know. And I said, well, so we had to go and get a garage extension thing on our Honda. And I was like going, okay. But neither one of us drive. It was not something we did.
You didn't need this car.
No. And I'm just not into that. I want the highest priority things in my life, and I want to do the highest priority actions and something that's meaningful. Because I like to sleep at night with a state of gratitude. And I know that if I make some sort of difference, I get to have more gratitude. That's what runs my life.
I think this is why people in this country love to attend your talks and to meet you and to hear what you have to say about things. Because I think a lot of people are looking for answers. But truly, they got to find those answers in themselves, right?
Ultimately, they have it. inside you. There, I had this Indian teacher who had six PhDs by the time he was 35. Very bright guy. Very bright guy. And I was bugging his ear, asking him questions after question after question. I'm trying to learn from this guy because he was extremely, wealth of knowledge. Mm. And finally he turned to me and he says, ask your question, but instead of me giving you the answer, answer yourself. And then at the end, I'll tell you the answer. And I'll bet you that the answer that you already have is the same answer that I have. And then I'll let you trust your answers because you already know. And he offloaded my dependency on him to help me become self-reliant. And I was very grateful for that, because then I started trusting my own knowing. And I was around 20-something, 21 or something. I started trusting my own knowing. And I always said, when the voice and the vision on the inside is louder than the opinions on the outside, you begin to master your life. So you have wisdom inside, and most people don't access it. And they when they trust it and learn it, they can do amazing things with it.
Dr. John DeMartini, it's always good to catch up with you. This time we got to talk more about the kind of things that you address in your work, and last time we got to speak about your life. But there's so much more to discover about this and about each other in the South African context or in the international context. And really, you're a global citizen. I mean, we were talking earlier with Mubs about which passport you need to get around the world.
Yeah, you said it was Germany, I think.
Are there places that you still want to go to?
When I was 17, I had a dream to step foot on every country on the face of the earth.
How close are we to that goal?
I'm just over the halfway mark. And I've said since I was 20 that the universe is my playground, the world is my home, every country is a room in the house, every city is a platform to share my heart and soul. And that's why I think, even living on the world, I think that's why I ended up there. I think that affirmation is still apropos for my destiny.
You're still on the world?
Yeah, I've been on there for almost 15 years now.
Okay, now you've got a cabin on there. It's yours.
I've got a condominium there. Yeah.
Okay, now in there, what do you keep in there? You talk about these. I'm just fascinated that you don't have a home base. Like, you don't have a place that's yours.
Well, believe it or not, when I'm not there, I rent it out. So I'm just there when I'm there, and I'm mainly traveling, teaching. That's what I love doing. I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing. So I just do that.
Wow. And have we got another wife on the way at some point?
No, I don't have another wife on the way. I'm dating somebody, but I'm not. It's not wife yet.
Okay, not wife material.
Well, I don't know about that, but just not wife.
She's gonna have to make sure that she's the top of the top of the pile.
She's a pretty amazing lady.
She has to be.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing.
Yes, truly.
All right. Well, Dr. John DeMartini, it's a pleasure to see you again. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Come in and visit us again soon.
Thank you.
You are a very inspiring man, and you often say some of the things that we all should know. You said you've got to know it's inside you. You probably have the answers. But you say it, and then it helps us to kind of come up with it ourselves.
Well, Gareth, thank you for letting me be with you today.
Always good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cliffcentral.com.